Hey, everybody. Welcome back once again to the Bruins Diehards, coming to you live from the studios of the Williams Broadcasting Group, creative programming for radio, television, and diversified full-length podcasts for the web. That's at williamsbroadcasting.net. Want to remind you that we come your way every Wednesday right around 4 o'clock in the afternoon. For all of you podcast freaks out there, remember that we are streaming live, and you can listen to us that way if you'd like to just by going to the front page of our website at williamsbroadcasting.net. Click onto the big microphone at the bottom of the page, and we'll be there with you, and you'll be there with us as well. Don't forget, you can also click onto our icon that says the Bruins Diehards. It'll take you to our homepage, pick up the show there, or any of our archive shows as well. But perhaps most importantly, you can listen to us on demand anytime you would like to, 7 days a week on any platform that you normally listen to your favorite podcast on. You will be able to listen to Bruins Diehards. And so we hope that you will join us that way as well. And I know that a lot of you do. I'm John Williams, and of course, joined by my longtime co-host, Jeff Mannix, who is also the host of Mannix and Mannix, coming your way every Monday through Friday from 10 o'clock in the morning till 2 o'clock in the afternoon on 92.5 and 96.3, The Big Jab with Atlantic Coast Radio. Jeff, you made it up through the monsoon.
I did. I did. It wasn't much of a monsoon until I got right into this general area. But yes, I did make it through.
Generally, the way it always happens up here, we get more rain than anybody else does. But it's within about a 2 mile radius,
right,
of where you were driving.
Which is interesting because my wife and I joke when we live in Lewiston, the east side of Lewiston, and like we see storms coming from the west all the time, and They usually always miss us in one way or another. They'll go one way or they'll go the other, but we don't get hit with them very much at our house anyway. So that's, I guess, just kind of the joke we share.
We get it all the time.
Oh,
it's,
yes.
It's just unbelievable. No question about it. We get it all the time. But anyhow, we are back, and you and I have sort of been absent from one another for the last couple, 3 weeks, and a lot has happened in those last 3 weeks, hasn't it?
Yes.
I think the last time that we got together, we talked about what we thought was going to happen with the Stanley Cup Finals.
Yep.
You made predictions. I made predictions. You ended up winning the prediction because the Florida Panthers ended up winning. But I was the one that said I thought it would go seven games,
right,
and it did go seven games. And what a series.
Yeah, it was
a tale of two series, maybe?
Pretty much, right? I mean, it was, you know, we almost had an historic comeback in that Stanley Cup final. And credit to the Edmonton Oilers for even being, you know, getting themselves back into that series where they had an opportunity to win the Stanley Cup.
Yep.
Because, I mean, this is, you know, how many 3-0 series leads have we seen in a Stanley Cup final? And only two of them now have gotten to a seventh game where that has occurred.
That's right.
Really something else there for Edmonton to battle their way through. And really, I think in the three games they won, they were clearly the better team on the night.
Yep.
But again, credit the Florida Panthers because, you know, and this is what I talked about last time we were here, that they gave themselves such an advantage because, you know, you gave yourself four shots to win one game.
Yeah.
And as it turned out, they needed all four of those chances in order to get that one win. But they managed to do it. And, you know, just an amazing little run there. And the just kind of seeing the relief, I think, from so many folks there in Florida, but also just from everybody around that organization. And as I've said before on this show, I did spend a little bit of time within that organization because our final affiliation with the Portland Pirates was with the Florida Panthers, and there are still, you know, a number of people within that organization that I was working with 8 years ago that are still there. So you know, really happy for them to achieve this, because I mean, 8 years is a long time, you know, and a lot of those folks like Adeline Bidenbach, who's their director of communications, and you know, Jameson Olive, and a lot of those folks who kind of work on the communication side of the Panthers were all there 8 years ago. A few of them had just started. Some of them had been in the job for quite a while. Adeline, for instance, had been there for quite a few years already. And so it's nice to, for them, certainly, to get this done, because that had been, you know, even going back 8 years, and this was basically two rebuilds ago with the Florida Panthers at that point. But just to kind of see everything that they'd hoped for and what hockey could be in that South Florida market now come to fruition is pretty cool. I'm really happy for them. I'm happy for that fan base. I know Boston Bruins fans probably are throwing stuff at their devices right now as I say that. But to me, that's one of the good aspects of this sport. You know, as I've said many times before, do I follow the Bruins? Obviously, co-hosting a podcast about them, and I'm following them very closely, but thankfully I've met so many people in my very short time in professional hockey of 5 years that are all kind of spread around the league now. And I root for all of them in certain ways. And some of them are, you know, now are in organizations that would be considered real rivals of the Bruins, et cetera. It's nice to see that, and it's nice to see, especially for those long suffering Florida fans, you know. And it was funny to me before game five of the Stanley Cup final that the Panthers kind of leaned into that with the towels that they handed out before the Stanley Cup final, because it had the words "all six of us" on it, because that was the joke amongst, you know, a lot of hockey fans, is like, oh yeah, nobody cares about the Panthers, all six of you down there. So you know, kind of nice for those, you know, fans who'd been around from the beginning, you know, when this team started 30 years ago back in 1993-94, and reached that Stanley Cup final out of nowhere in 96 in their very first playoff run, and then really didn't have much success again for about 20 years after that. So great for Florida. Really excited for them to see this. And you know, I kind of doubted them as time went on throughout the season, because normally the team that loses us in the Stanley Cup final does take a step back in the following season, and they did not do that. And that is a credit to Paul Maurice. That's a credit to Alexander Barkov, their captain, to Matthew Tkachuk, who's one of the other leaders, that there was from day one of training camp, when they got back, you know, after only basically the 2.5 month summer break for them, when they got back, it was all business and all about getting back to the Stanley Cup final and actually winning it this time. And they did the job, and congratulations to them. And Sergei Bobrovsky finally has his Stanley Cup. And, you know, I think a lot of, and Paul Maurice too, for that matter, finally has his Stanley Cup, a guy who'd been coaching in the league for nearly 30 years, who'd never won before and has been close a couple times and finally gets it done this time. And Maurice has kind of become one of the great spokesman of the National Hockey League, I think. But congratulations, Florida. That was really fun to see, and I'm going to be interested now to see what Edmonton's going to do, because there's definite talk and definite different decisions that they'll need to make now on some guys. And I have a feeling we may talk about one of those particular Oilers players in regard to the Bruins, because there's certainly been talk of a possible trade at some point down the line. But it's you know, a great run, and as you said, it was a great series. It really was a fun series, and I just want to share real quick, because I did something that I'd never done before for Game 7 of that Stanley Cup Final. My wife and I were actually on on the beginning of our vacation there. We did one night trip to Seabrook, New Hampshire. So we went for game 7 of that final to the Brook Casino, which has a sports book in it. I'd never been to one of those before. So I decided I want to check out, see what it is. And so we watched game 7 from there. And I'd never, never being in a sports book, to watch and hear the reactions of people to goals, to, little things that happened. It was a unique experience, and it was a lot of fun just to when each team, scored something, there'd be a different set of people that would be all excited and all of that. So by the way, that seems like, at least from the reactions that night at the Brook, there were more people there who'd bet on Edmonton than had bet on Florida. So I think the folks who made that game 7 bet on the Panthers were pretty happy, but it definitely sounded, at least from the cheers that went up when Edmonton would do something good, that there were more people there who at least had some money on the Oilers.
I think that, one of the things that was impressive to me, and you mentioned it just a moment ago, is that, this is a market, this Florida market is a market that, there's been questions about, can it support, they've already got Tampa Bay there, mm-hmm. and now they've got Florida. Can it continue to support that? And can it continue to sort of evolve, which so many markets in the United States have in relationship to National Hockey League teams? And there seems to be a little question about the fact that, the fans are very loyal there. This is something they've been waiting for a very long time. And just the idea, whether you like them or not, whether they're rivals or not, whether people are spitting at the microphones, as you just mentioned a moment ago, because we're talking this way, the fact is that this helps hockey continue to grow and expand. And to see the Florida Panthers finally pick up that elusive Stanley Cup is certainly, I think, very good for all of professional hockey. No question in my mind about that. And as far as the Edmonton Oilers go, as you just mentioned, this is a team that was trying to bring the Stanley Cup back to Canada, and mm-hmm. and it hasn't been up there for a while. Yeah. And the fact is that at least early on in this series, it certainly didn't look like it was going to go back to Canada, but then this team, found a. It was almost like they switched. They hit a different switch.
Yeah.
When they started to play well, and they started to score, and they started to play the kind of defense they're capable of playing, and they really, really put they put the muscle to it, I call it. Mm-hmm. And Florida didn't seem to be, in my mind, they didn't seem to be prepared for that, for what happened there. Even after that first game that Edmonton won, you just still got the feeling that Florida didn't believe that. They could lose. They didn't believe they could lose, and they probably thought, all right, okay, that's a hiccup. Mm-hmm. Now we'll close this thing out. And it just seemed to get, for Florida, it got a little bit worse and worse and worse, to the point where they were back on their heels. And finally, after that big win in Edmonton and then heading back to Florida, you just got the feeling, and you mentioned this when we were talking about this, if they get back to that game 7, it's anybody's series. Mm-hmm. And I think that obviously is true. But Florida found a way to sort of get back to playing the way they were in those first 3 games. They got a little tougher physically. They kept Edmonton basically far enough away from the net so that they didn't have that many scoring chances, and they played great defense right through the end of that game, mm-hmm. and that's what won them the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, it did, and I think getting a goal fairly early in that game was really helpful for Florida, too, when Carter Verhaeghe scored less than 5 minutes in, and Matthias Janmark had a very good answer, a little more than 2 minutes after that, but I think it was huge for the Panthers, especially in that game, to get an early lead, because it allowed them to settle into what they do, which is, playing hard defense, really making it hard for other teams to penetrate and get good looks at goal. And they certainly were able to do that. And I think the better team on the night won. You know, Edmonton, I think, had a real nice push in the third period to try to win that game, or at least force it to overtime. Okay. They outshot Florida 9-4 in that final period, which is not surprising. That's usually what happens. The team that's behind is going to try to chase it. And the team that's ahead with a championship on the line is going to try to protect it as best that they can. And I think Florida did exactly what they needed to do. And as soon as they got that second lead again with less than 5 minutes to go in the second on that screenshot by Sam Reinhart, I mean, once they got the lead the second time, it felt like a fait accompli for me. You know, all the credit in the world to Bobrovsky, but I want to single out Stuart Skinner too.
Oh, yeah.
From the Edmonton Oilers.
Absolutely.
Because yep. I think his trajectory in the National Hockey League to watch now is going to be quite interesting, because I mean he is not the reason that they lost. You know, and I think you could make the argument early in the series, because he didn't play particularly well early in the series, but he did play well as the series went on.
Sure,
I'd say game
sure
five,
did.
Game six, and yep. game seven especially,
yep.
he was really good, and he's going to be a very interesting goaltender for me to watch now, because I wonder if he gains some confidence from this. I mean, he's had, you know, runs where he's been really good over long stretches of time, and then, you know, he'll throw the bad game out there, you know, one where he'll get pulled after two periods, or, you know, give up six goals on, you know, 20 shots or something like that. But now, and I think the way he played at the end of the series too probably puts to bed a little bit of the discussion around Edmonton going out and getting another goalie, because that was very much part of the background discussion with the Oilers really all through this playoff run. And the thought of some people, maybe myself included, is that Skinner was not ultimately good enough to help them win. And he still may not be, but he at least looks closer to it now than we thought going into these playoffs. I had wondered going into the offseason if Edmonton would really kind of test that goalie market and maybe see if they could get another guy. And I don't believe that's going to happen anymore. I think they'll go into next season with Stuart Skinner as their definite number one goaltender, and it's going to be his net to lose at this point. And I think it's going to be his net to lose going forward now.
Well, I think that I think you're right, and there were some analytics associated with that I think helped support that basic premise, Jeff. And one of them that I was reading before things started to get tight, and after Florida had taken that big 3-0 series lead, and then Edmonton won, and Skinner started to get stronger and stronger and stronger as the series went on. And that sort of supported the analytics behind this guy, which basically is, it's almost like he's a big series goalie, meaning that, you know, when they're up against it, when their backs are against the wall, it seems to be when he's at his best.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when it comes to that type of thing, and you take a look at a goalie like that, I guess probably when it comes down to it, if he's good enough to get them into the playoffs, if he's good enough to get them into a deep run in the playoffs, he's the kind of goalie that you kind of want there, because he seems to be able to be at his very best when things don't seem to be going as well as they mm-hmm. as you'd like them to be. And that's the way it was with Edmonton getting to the Stanley Cup Finals. He came through in the late stages of these series to end up basically, you know, he wasn't the total reason that it happened,
mm-hmm.
but there's no question that he was a major factor in them getting to where they got.
No, without a question. And he, you know, just as a for instance, his playoff numbers this year were better than his regular season numbers.
Yeah.
For the most part, his goals against average came down, I think, by about two tenths of a percentage point. It went from 2.64 to 2.45. In the playoffs. Save percentage was 901 in the postseason. You maybe like to see that a little bit higher. Regular season was 905. But look, I mean, he came up with a lot of important plays when he needed to, and he did play better as those playoffs went on. And I think Edmonton was right at the time in the second round against Vancouver to actually sit him down for a couple of games and play Chad Pickard instead. Once they went back to him, that seemed to be the correct move. And I let's put it this way. I didn't think in the Stanley Cup final, even when it started down 0-3, that they were going to make any moves there, it was going to be Skinner throughout the rest of the series, however long it went. And that was exactly the case.
Yeah. So anyhow, the Stanley Cup is in the books for another year. The Florida Panthers win their first Stanley Cup championship in history, which is remarkable. And the Edmonton Oilers certainly showed themselves well, especially in bringing this to a 7-game series in the end, because I think no one really expected that to happen after Florida took a 3-0 lead. But now here we are in the off season, and things are, you know, things are happening around the league. I do want to take just a real quick break, and you were talking a little bit about the fact that, you know, sooner than later, we're also going to be talking about college hockey, which we do a lot of on this program. And one of the things that came out just recently was the University of Maine schedule. And of course, we all know that the University of Maine had a real breakout season last year, and so I'm sure a lot of people are looking forward to that.
No doubt. Yeah, and it's a lot of home games this year. We'll just say that. A lot of games in Orono. So that's exciting.
That's exciting. It really is. Ben Barr has done such a tremendous job with that program in the 3 years that he's been there, and given them an opportunity to once again get into the playoffs and be a contender, and certainly be a contender at the Hockey East level. And we're looking forward to that as well. And I'm sure we'll be talking with Ben Barr before the season begins.
You bet.
So what I'm going to do is I think I'm going to take our break right now. And when we come back, we'll sort of get into all things Bruins and take a look at free agency, take a look at the NHL draft and some of the news associated with that. There's certainly plenty of it. Once again, I'm John Williams for Jeff Mannix, and I want to welcome you to our show. We're sorry that we've been gone for a few weeks, but, you know, you got to take a break occasionally. And so once again, we are back. It is Bruins Diehards, everybody. Hold on. We'll be right back.
201 Power Sports. Remember these three words: rentals, riding, relaxation. No matter how you choose to enjoy the great outdoors, we've got you covered. If you're looking for some adrenaline-fueled time on the trails, our ATV rental services in Bingham, the Forks, and Jackman, Maine will have you exploring the countryside in no time at all. If you'd rather sit back, relax, and have a cocktail while taking in the sights of historic Wyman Lake and the surrounding area, our pontoon boat tours, they're just what you've been looking for. So don't wait another minute to start enjoying the year-round attractions our great outdoors has to offer. Contact us today to plan your next adventure in Bingham, in the Forks, and in Jackman, Maine. Just remember, it's all waiting for you at 201powersports.com.
Enjoy a New England staycation and let Northern Outdoors in the Forks, Maine show you some prime fishing spots, uncrowded hiking trails, and hundreds of miles of magnificent ATV, UTV, and side-by-side trails filled with spectacular mountain views, riverside rides, and scenic lake destinations, all accessible from the comfort of your cabin or campsite. Or take a trip on the wild side and experience a thrilling whitewater rafting trip through the Kennebec River Gorge. You'll explore a natural adventure playground where nature bursts all around you with the sounds and thrills of the river as you take on the roller coaster waves that Kennebec is renowned for, and enjoy a grilled riverside lunch at noon. At day's end, the back deck at the main lodge will beckon for you to toast a frosty brew from their own Kennebec River Brewery. So plan your best summer adventure in Maine. As a quick escape or a full-on adventure experience, Northern Outdoors will be waiting to show you, your family, and your friends the best summer getaway. It all starts at northernoutdoors.com.
You've worked your whole life. Now, let us work for you. At Norway Savings Asset Management Group, we share your goals, we listen, and we help you build your retirement the way you want. I'm Kurt Garasha.
And I'm Jen Cook. Live the life you choose with the comfort of knowing that our asset management group is handling the rest. Come visit us at norwaysavings.bank.
Investment products are not FDIC insured, not guaranteed by the bank, and may lose value.
Welcome, everyone, to the Poland Spring Resort. Since 1794, guests have enjoyed our clean air, water, and beautiful scenery. It's like a bit of heaven on earth, and we'd like to share it with you. You know, we're proud of our home-like atmosphere and our super-friendly staff. Poland Spring is on the National Register of Historic Sites. By the way, enjoy a round of golf on our championship 18-hole golf course, Play tennis on one of our three grass courts, explore our rich history at the Poland Spring Museums, and participate in many indoor and outdoor activities. Enjoy some family activities together, like swimming in our huge pool, playing on the swings, taking a hike, playing mini golf and disc golf as well. And then relax and watch the spectacular sunsets over the golf course and the White Mountains of New Hampshire with your favorite beverage or ice cream sundae. Make this year the year you enjoy a truly relaxing, stress-free vacation at Poland Spring Resort. Oh, by the way, when you tee up at the Poland Spring Golf Course, you're playing on the same turf where Babe Ruth, Walter Hagen, Bobby Jones, Harry Vardon, President Taft, Sonny Liston, and many more celebrities have played. In the history of the golf course, it's long and proud. Opening in July of 1896, when there were only 80 golf courses in the United States, it remains the oldest resort course in the country. Want to come up and enjoy a truly great family vacation? Just go to PolandSpringResort.com and I'll see you there.
Hey, we're back, everybody. It's Bruins Diehards, John Williams and Jeff Mannix joining you on this Wednesday afternoon, rainy afternoon here in the western foothills of Maine from the studios of the Williams Broadcasting Group to talk about the Bruins. And maybe I start off by saying that, you know, they've just finished up during the opening stages of free agency and spending more money under you know, Don Sweeney than ever before.
Yeah.
$92 million. And I think we sort of expected this was going to happen. You know, Don Sweeney's been talking this way for a while, and I guess probably we start off by talking a little bit about some of these signings and exactly what that means for the Bruins, or maybe what are your thoughts before we get into the specifics of this as to what they've been doing and how they've been doing it?
Yeah, obviously the signing period began kind of with a bang for the Bruins. Now announcing almost as soon as free agency opened up on July 1st at noon, their two big signings of the offseason, both ironically enough from the Vancouver Canucks. Elias Lindholm, who'd been linked with the Bruins, seems like going back at least 2 years when it came to trade deadlines, etc., signed a 7-year deal worth $54.25 million, cap hit of $7.75 million for the season. And then Nikita Zadorov, the big defenseman, signing 6 years, $30 million, $5 million a season against the cap. Of course, the other few signings that have been made are a little bit more on the I would say the smaller side, I guess. Max Jones, a 2-year, $2 million contract, a guy who'd spent a little bit of time in the Anaheim Ducks organization. And I'm a little bit intrigued by the youngster Riley Tufte, who's a big dude as well. At 6'6", he'd played college hockey at Minnesota Duluth and has been around the league a little bit here as well. His most recent team was Colorado. He's spent most of his time so far in the minor leagues, but I do think he's a player who stands a chance anyway of maybe finding his way into the lineup at 26 years old. He's definitely one that I find intriguing a little bit. Former first round draft pick of the Dallas Stars from 2016. So that's an interesting one to me, but obviously the big ones are Lindholm and Zadorov. And I've seen some criticism of the Bruins signings. At least they feel like the cap hits or the money dished out to those players might have been too much. I'm not really of that opinion. I think the market kind of bears whatever it will bear. And I remember actually as soon as the signing happened on Mannix and Mannix, someone called in about the Lindholm signing in particular, saying that that's probably too much money. And my response to that was, well, that was what David Krejci was paid. Yeah. And yeah, that's and he produces in a similar way to David Krejci. So that was the market value. Like, I'm sorry, maybe you don't agree that that's the market value, but that is the market value. So the Bruins have fixed their center position. At least I think when it comes to who's going to be the top guy, it's going to be him. You know, you're going to put him likely between David, whether it's between David Pastrnak and Brad Marchand, but I think you're going to put him with Pastrnak and somebody else on the left wing. And I like the Zadorov signing too, because I think he adds a little bit more muscle and grit to that defensive grouping.
No question.
I think Bruins fans are going to love the way he throws the body and is not really afraid to check anybody at any point and anywhere on the ice. He is that type of player. And I think he's going to be a nice addition to this team. Now, whether I suspect he'll play in a top four position, at least to start. Yeah. The question is, do you pair him with a guy like McAvoy, or do you pair him with a guy like Carlo at this point?
And I think that's going to be a big question. He's good in all
the zones.
He's good in all the zones. That's the other thing about Zadorov I think that's important. I want to jump back to Lindholm for just a moment, because one of the things I think that people aren't, maybe some of the things that people are forgetting when it comes to this criticism as well, is that this is a guy that is somewhat like Patrice Bergeron from the perspective of the way that he plays. You know, he's kind of a selkie performer.
Sure.
And the fact is that, you know, one of the problems that they really, things really fell off when it came to faceoffs in 2023 and 24. And, you know, when they lost Krejci, when they lost Patrice Bergeron, you know, that was tough. And you need to be able to win the faceoffs. You need to be there so you can control the puck. He's good at that. I mean, you know, he generally wins, I think they said 54 or 55% of the faceoffs
that he takes. Which is a very good percentage in the NHL.
Absolutely. Very good percentage in the NHL. And so subsequently, I think from that perspective, you know, Lindholm not only fulfills what it is that they needed to do, which is to get that center that certainly is either on the first line or the second line and can fulfill the issues that they felt that they had when they lost Bergeron and Krejci. But again, he's a guy that goes both ways. He's a guy that is also good on defense, plays very, very well on defense when it comes to an offensive center that he is. But the faceoff thing to me sort of jumped out at me, because he's the kind of guy they need to start controlling that puck.
You got it right. Absolutely, John. And really the guy who they had to rely on to do that last year was Charlie Coyle, who's fine in the faceoff circle, but Lindholm does bring something, you know, a little bit more of an element of being able to control that puck more. And the more you can control the puck, you put the other team on your heels, and you've got the ability to kind of really force the issue there. He's a responsible guy in his own end, as well as he's a very large plus player over the course of his career. Last year's regular season, when he was minus 14, actually was a little bit of a surprise combined between Calgary and Vancouver. I think part of that, certainly in Calgary, was the fact that they were giving up a ton of goals with the Flames over the past season. And in Vancouver, you know, I mean, I think it was, he kind of had trouble finding his spot in the lineup coming through, you know, midway through the season there, and certainly came on very well at the start, but after that kind of slipped a little bit. And but I do think he's going to be a solid, responsible player here. And one other, you know, thing to point to, you know, a lot of people, you know, say, and I think the Bruins are hoping he gets back to the, you know, closer to the stat line that he had in Calgary a couple years ago, in the 2021-22 season, where he scored 42 goals and had 40 assists, literally a point per game, 82 points over an 82 game season. And he hasn't really scratched the surface of that again in the 2 years since. It was 22 goals last year and 42 assists, or 2 years ago, this is 22 goals, 42 assists for 64 points. And then last year combined between Calgary and Vancouver, 15 goals, 29 assists, 44 points over the stretch of 75 games last year that he played combined between those two. One thing to look at, and another reason why I think this might be a good risk for the Bruins to take, the two line mates that were playing with Lindholm mostly, or the most during that 2021-22 season were Johnny Gaudreau and Matthew Tkachuk. Obviously two elite players in the NHL. And Lindholm, his best season was playing with those two guys. I think David Pastrnak's a better pure scorer than both of them. So,
which is going to give him more opportunities.
You bet. And I don't know that he'll get to 40 goals again with Boston, but if he's able to break his record of 51 assists in a and that will be fine with me. His best assist season was his first year in Calgary, 2018-19, when he had 51. But I would almost expect him to get 50 assists at a minimum, so long as he stays healthy and plays with Pastrnak.
And that gets back to his multifaceted, you know, diversity and the way he plays on both ends of the ice, and the way he controls the puck and that type of thing. And I mean, with Pastrnak there, you know, not as much focus will be on him. He'll be able to do that. And playing with an elite player like that, as you said, you know, he had done that before. And when he had been with elite players in the past, you know, that's when he had his best seasons. And he's still young enough so that, you know, he's got a lot of hockey ahead of him. And I think from that perspective, it's really good. And Zadorov, you know, to me, you know, you mentioned the physicality of Zadorov. And I think that it's notable that this is a guy that is big, 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 and he can really throw his weight around. And these are the kinds of players I think the Bruins need more of, these type of physical players right now, because they're beginning to develop a team that's good. You know, I think they've got a good set of forwards. I think we've got the center in place. Bringing a guy like Zadorov is really going to improve the blue line play, and I think from that perspective, that's something they really needed.
Absolutely, if you ask me, this defensively anyway, this is a big upgrade.
Huge.
from Matt Grzelcyk, who you obviously lost via free agency. But I mean, 6'6" and 248 pounds. I mean, I'd rather have a responsible defenseman back there who can throw their weight around.
Kind of Zdeno Chara, kind of.
Yes, exactly. and I love the comments that he was making too, kind of in his introductory press conference, where, you know, he said, because everybody called him Big Z everywhere else he's been. Zadorov, this is. So he said he was happy to retire that nickname, because that's Zdeno Chara in Boston. So he's never going to be known as Big Z in Boston. Doesn't want to be. So I think that's nice too. And he certainly looked very happy to be joining the Bruins organization there in his introductory press conference earlier this week.
There is no question about that. Maybe it's time to jump right into the Linus Ullmark trade.
Yes.
And the fact that, you know, he finally that has been put to rest.
Yes.
He is gone. You know, he's with Ottawa now. You know, they've got a first round draft pick as a result of that. A couple of other players are coming over. What is your assessment of that trade, and what does it mean to the Bruins at this particular juncture? Obviously, we'll get into a conversation about Jeremy Swayman at some point here.
No doubt, because that is, I think this was the most important thing that needed to happen in the Bruins off season for the long term stability of the team. You know, Linus Ullmark, I can't say anything more, anything more glowing about him than his time in Boston. I mean, that one, you know, that 22-23 season where he won 40 games and lost six and won the Vezina is a goaltending season that is almost without equal. And
pretty historic.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And it's not something that is going to be easily matched again. And as I said, I don't think even Ullmark is going to be able to do that again. I just think that was, you know, a guy who'd really just kind of it all clicked in for one particular season. But I think this opportunity now for him is going to be a good opportunity to go to a team where he is going to be the unquestioned number one, because that was one of the things that's one thing that both he and Swayman said in the offseason, is that they want the net. So you've now given both guys, in essence, the opportunity to have the net. wherever that they are. And with Ullmark, that'll be in Ottawa now. It was a little tough to see him go to an in-division team, but I think with some of the trades that had happened earlier in the week, because there were a couple of other goaltenders that got moved earlier on in the week before Ullmark had been, when New Jersey got Jacob Markstrom from Calgary, and when Los Angeles traded for Darcy Kemper from Washington, that took a couple, I think, of probably the major suitors for Linus Ullmark off the board by those two going and trading for somebody else. So I think Ottawa was probably going to be the only, you know, the only team that could come in with an offer that would make sense for Boston to actually make the move. And that's exactly what they did here, getting the first round, getting themselves back into the first round this year. Thank goodness for that, that they were able to actually have a first round pick in this year's draft. But and Mark Kostelec, the centerman that they got, who's basically a prospect, I don't know that he's somebody who's going to crack the lineup right away or anything like that, but one thing that has been very clear is they've been trying to improve the center depth of this team. And any way that you can do that, I think is going to be a good thing here for the Boston Bruins. And I'll be intrigued to see how he might look. I suspect he might be destined for Providence ultimately, but I'll be interested to see how it goes. And obviously you get Jonas Korpisalo as well, who's kind of a veteran goalie in the National Hockey League now at this point. He's had some good years. He's had some poor years. I think he's a goalie who was in a similar spot to Ullmark when he got to Boston, where, you know, he kind of needs a chance. But it also, certainly if you read anything from a lot of the folks who follow the Bruins right now, that goaltending or that backup goaltending job very much looks like it is up for grabs right now. And that is not going necessarily to Korpisalo. They're going to give Brandon Bussey a chance to win his way to be the backup in the National Hockey League next season. And I think he certainly earned that ability with his 2 years in Providence, which have both been pretty good. So, we'll see if it's him or if it's Korpisalo. But either way, I think the Bruins, I think they accomplished what they wanted to accomplish out of trading Linus Ullmark. You got yourself a first-round draft pick. Yep. And one that you could use this year. Yep. You got yourself another, you know, depth centerman in Kostelec, who does not have, you know, great offensive numbers in the league. He's played a combined 144 games with Ottawa over three seasons and has just 14 goals and 11 assists for 25 points. So, you know, I don't think he's going to light the lamp all that much necessarily. And that's why I think he might be destined ultimately, at least to begin the season, for Providence. He's spent each of his three seasons in the NHL so far as a pro, he has split the seasons between the AHL and the NHL within the Senators organization. So I suspect it'll start that way again with Boston. And maybe we won't know until the guy who they selected in the first round with that pick they got from Ottawa, the 6'7" centerman Dean Letourneau, how he turns out to be once he actually gets to the National Hockey League. And that may be a few years away because he's about to start a college career at Boston College this upcoming season. So it may take a little time to determine if the Bruins quote unquote won that trade or not. I think Ottawa is going to be just happy with getting a goalie they feel comfortable with to try and kind of stabilize things back there, because that was one area where they really struggled over the course of last season. It's one of the reasons why the team didn't perform nearly as well as they expected it to, and as a lot of NHL pundits seem to believe it was going to do. The Ottawa Senators were a very sexy pick to jump into the playoffs preseason last year, and they never looked at any point last year like they were a playoff team. And they're in a position now where it's kind of put up or shut up for them. Yep. They've got to take at least some kind of a step, maybe not reach the playoffs this year, but at least be in contention to the last week or something like that. Like you can't be completely out of the playoff race with a month to go again with that team, or they're going to start over. I think, and they've got some real good young players there. Stutzla's very good. Brady Tkachuk is very good. You've got some real nice pieces there, but until you can put it all together, you know, it's, and they made this investment in this young group of players because they thought they were going to get them back to the glory days of, you know, when Daniel Alfredson was playing there as their captain for so many years. But it has not taken yet. And this was, I think, a move that Ottawa felt was very necessary. And I also think it was kind of shrewd business from the Bruins too, because one thing that has been hanging over them in this offseason, and I'm sure this is going to be the next topic we'll discuss, is that Jeremy Swayman still is not signed.
Oh, yes.
But one of the teams that was being brought up as the most likely team to maybe sign an offer sheet for Jeremy Swayman was Ottawa, because they had the money and because they had a hole in net. Trading Linus Ullmark to Ottawa took that option away from them. So in essence, it does solidify that Jeremy Swayman's going to be your number one. And thankfully they won't need to do arbitration this year, because both the team and the player didn't file for it this year.
Correct.
So they can still just negotiate up until training camp. And there doesn't seem to be any concern from either side about it getting done. It's just a matter of actually coming to the terms that are going to be happy, or is going to make both sides maybe not happy, but at least will be manageable for both sides. And that's going to be the next kind of thing. And I know there are some Bruins fans that are maybe a little bit panicked and like, why hasn't it happened yet? I'm a little bit more kind of cautious about it. I think they're eventually going to get it done. It's just a matter of when at this point. And when that deal does come, I think it's going to be, you know, Bruins fans will just kind of rejoice at that the goaltending situation will be solidified for a while. I'm expecting a long-term deal. I'm kind of expecting it to be like a 6, 7, or 8 year contract that they'll hand to Jeremy Swayman, probably with a pretty healthy raise from the nearly $3.5 million per season that he got last year.
Could approach $8 million.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's basically what UDC Saros just signed for in Nashville. Was 8 years and $8 million per season. I don't know that Swayman's going to get quite there because he's younger, and Saros has proved it a little longer in the National Hockey League, but I think the numbers are similar, and I think that's a good comparison, at least statistically, for Swayman over his time in the NHL. So I think that is going to get done. It's just a matter, again, of when it gets done, but I think it's going to get done. If there was any real worry about it, I don't think you would have seen Swayman at Bruins development camp. And he was there and, you know, being quite jovial and being like himself. So I think he's going to be in good shape. And he certainly looked in good spirits when I saw him very, very briefly at the Drive for Kids in Falmouth 3 weeks back, which he participated in that charity golf tournament at Falmouth Country Club. But he was in good spirits. And let me tell you, he also, at least on the day I was there, which was Friday, which was the Celeb Am Day, as they call it. So the teams of golfers of, you know, amateurs playing with one of these guys that were just participating in the tournament. Jeremy Swayman had the biggest gallery by far of anybody that was there, like not close. I saw him leaving the 10th green and he had a line of 20 people looking for an autograph. And I think it was probably like that through most of every single day he was there.
You know, I think one of the things too, that, you know, it seems like, as you just said, it seems like the environment is more relaxed this year when it comes to Jeremy. I mean, obviously the big kind of, I guess, roadblock, if you will, is that Linus Ullmark is now gone.
Yeah.
And so therefore it's like, okay, it's all yours, you know, and it basically is. I mean, yes. Do they need to have backup goalies? Is Brendan Bussey possibly going to be his backup? You know, the point is that it seems like it's a more relaxed environment this year than it was last year during arbitration, and that they all feel pretty, I think, optimistically that this is going to go well. Now, you talked about offer sheets and that type of thing. You talked about taking Ottawa off of that list. There's still a couple of teams out there that potentially could throw a monkey wrench into this. One of them is the Canadiens. The other one is the Predators. Both of those teams need goalies, and or they need to improve their position with the net. There's no question about that. It seems as though most of the talk surrounds those two teams. There don't seem to be many other teams that anyone feels they're going to make that will make an offer sheet with us. Do you think they will?
I don't. And Nashville, I mean, I think Nashville kind of maybe took care of it by signing Saros long term. But Montreal, I mean, could they use it? Yeah, they could. But I just don't see it happening. I think if it was going to happen, it would have happened already. So I think the Bruins and Swayman are just kind of biding their time until they have the, as they view it, kind of right deal for both sides. Yeah, and then they'll put pen to paper and get it done. The Bruins do have, it's according to Puckpedia, who now basically, since Cap Friendly went away, thank you, Washington Capitals, Puckpedia now is probably the best tool when it comes to looking at salary caps. But the Bruins have, you know, a little more than $8.5 million of projected cap space left for the upcoming season. I would assume Jeremy Swayman would eat up most of that once this deal gets done. But there's enough room to make it happen, and I think there's enough room where you leave yourself that little bit of wiggle room too, in order to save some room to add at the trade deadline or something like that. So I'm comfortable with where the Bruins are at when it comes to salary cap right now. But that is, it is going to take them, you know, a lot closer to it once the Swayman deal gets done. But I mean, there are a lot of teams that are over next year's projected cap as it is right now. Yeah. None more so than, ironically enough, the team that literally bought Cap Friendly to bring it within their own organization, the Washington Capitals. So they, according to Puckpedia here, they are nearly $15 million more in payroll than the salary cap allows next year. So maybe it was a smart thing for them to get those cap geeks within their own organization to help them figure out how to do it, because it doesn't look like they do.
What is your sense about, how things have gone so far from the perspective of Don Sweeney and what it is that he's been able to accomplish and where they are at this particular juncture, at this particular point of the offseason?
Yeah, I mean, I think for this offseason anyway, that there was, you knew what the holes were with this team. You knew kind of where they were looking to upgrade and what they were looking to get done. And I think for the most part, they've checked the boxes that they were looking to check. You know, you traded Ullmark, you got yourself a number one centerman, you got another, you know, tough, rugged defenseman on the back end, and you've added some other, you know, ancillary pieces that can either help you out at the AHL level or, you know, in a spot game every now and then at the NHL level. So, you know, how much this team has improved, if it's improved from last year, I mean, that's going to be, you know, we'll have to wait until we get to training camp and see this team play some games before that judgment can be made, I think. But I, at least from what I believe to be the Bruins' off-season plan, I think they've pretty much executed it to this point. So from that standpoint, I think they've gotten basically what they were looking for. You know, the question mark is going to come, you know, how does that stack up against everybody else and some other, you know, I mean, the New Jersey Devils, for instance, have really kind of tried to transform their team this offseason and get back to what they were a couple years ago when they got to the second round of the playoffs. You know, Florida has had some subtractions, but they've also had some pretty decent additions too. Washington has gone pretty heavy into free agency. So there's a lot still to kind of play itself out. And certainly you can look at some of the guys the Bruins didn't bring back, some of the guys they've lost. And, you know, you wonder if some of those guys might end up being bigger losses than we expect. Certainly Jake DeBrusk is the biggest of them going to Vancouver. I think that was right for both the Bruins and the player.
It seemed like it was a given. You know, I mean, Don Sweeney started talking about it a few weeks ago, and the fact is that he fully expected, Jake to test the free market. I guess, and that doesn't surprise me, and I'm not terribly concerned about it, but there were a couple of other players, Danton Heinen and Derek Forbort, that also went free agent and went to Vancouver.
Yes.
I mean, they're all in Vancouver now. Are you surprised at all that the Bruins didn't maybe make more of an attempt to keep someone like that than Heinen? I'm not so much about Forbort, but mostly Heinen.
Yeah, Heinen. Heinen is the one who I did think maybe they would.
Yeah,
and ultimately, I think it probably just came down to dollars and cents, ultimately, is that Vancouver was able to offer him more money than Boston could, or at least was willing to. So I think that's where that came down. Yeah. Derek Forbort, I think, was probably on his way out, too, at this point. I mean, his injury history hasn't been great in Boston in these last couple years. And I think Zadorov can do what Forbort did better than Forbort.
Right.
So I think the Bruins upgraded when it came to that too. So, you know, I'm content with the Bruins off season, and you know, let's start to see how it plays out, I guess, when we start getting games, now that we know the schedule is out here too, and we know that the Bruins, of course, NHL schedule makers, man. They've scheduled the Bruins' first game to be banner night in Florida. What a shock. How about that? Bruins Panthers again. Let's go.
Oh, my God. I'm telling you, it never ends. It never ends. There's no question about it. And as we approach the end of our show for the week, you know, a lot of good information for people to digest. You know, one of the things that they talked a lot about was strengthening those top six forwards and making sure that, you know, that was something they were going to do. Obviously, they've done that with Lindholm, but you've got Trent Frederick back, you've got Charlie Coyle, you've got Brad Marchand, Pavel Saka, and obviously David Pastrnak to add to that. Is your sense that right now, looking at that offense, taking a look at the strength of that offense, that this is exactly, well, it's never exactly, but this is kind of where they want it to be as we take a look at the season ahead?
I tend to think yes. I think they're, you know, they've kind of, like I said, accomplished what they were looking to do, at least make the additions or the types of additions that they wanted. We'll see ultimately how it shakes itself out. But I do think that the Bruins are, at least right now, fairly solid with what they've done. I think they attracted or were trying to attract, you know, the types of players who they've brought in. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. I'm fairly confident that the Lindholm signing will work. Actually, that's the one that I think I'm probably most optimistic about.
I feel really good about it.
Because
I don't mean to beat a dead horse, but my feeling is that he's a good all-around player. He's a Selke kind of player. Mm-hmm. And the kind of person that they had hoped that they would be able to replace Patrice Bergeron with. And I think that he has all of the elements and the disciplines to do that. There's no question in my mind about it. And he's still young enough so that he still can develop and he can get back to having the kind of seasons that he has had in the past. And so I really look at that as that being a very, very, very positive move, and I agree with you 100%. The last thing I want to say before we say goodbye is that taking a look at the forwards again, Morgan Geekie, Matthew Patra, and also John Beecher, do you see them as continuing to improve and finding them as being a solid maybe third line or part of a third or fourth line that is going to continue to strengthen?
Yeah, and I bet Geekie specifically, because he can kind of play every forward position.
Yeah.
I think he may at times find his way into the top two lines as a winger.
Yeah.
But I think you can easily kind of slot him either as the number two or the number three centerman, really. I think Lindholm will probably be one, maybe Zaka two, unless you put him on the wing on the first line, and then probably Coyle will be as the third. And I like Beecher as the fourth line centerman right now. I think he fills that role really well. But Geekie, I think, does give you a little bit of versatility where he can kind of float throughout the lineup in wherever you kind of need him on that night. Matt Patra, I'm going to be interested to see what happens with him this year, because now that he's 20 years old, he can actually play in the American Hockey League. And I think that's probably going to be a good thing for him. If I'm the Bruins right now, that's probably my plan, actually, for Patra, is to say, and he's still kind of working his way back from that injury that ended his season last year. I don't believe he was completely full strength here at development camp, but my plan initially anyway for him would say, I'd say to him, you're a really talented hockey player. You're going to be a big part of our future. Right now, you need to play big minutes in big situations, and you're not going to do that in Boston. You're going to do that in Providence.
Makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it does.
Yep.
And I think, hopefully that would, that kind of improves every, I've seen it happen before where, guys, it takes a little bit for them sometimes. And maybe Patra was his preseason was great. His start to the year last year was great. But
it's a long season.
It's a long season. And it kind of came out of nowhere, right? Because I think really leading into the preseason, we weren't talking about Matt Patra making the team. He's an interesting prospect. It'll be fun to see what he can do. Oh, wow, he's on the opening night roster. I think he might have played over his head a little bit last year. I think taking the step back, letting him play in the American Hockey League, and people think like that's a big demotion. It isn't. The American Hockey League is a solid league. The folks within it say it's the second best hockey league in the world to the National Hockey League. I think there's a few top leagues in Europe that might disagree with that, but it is a good league. It is hard to win in that league. It is hard to play in that league. And if you can play in that league, you are a good hockey player. So if Patra, I think, starts the year in Providence, goes down, has a good attitude about it, and plays good hockey, that is good for him. That is good for the Boston Bruins in the long run.
Absolutely. Well, that's going to pretty much end it for us this week, Jeff. Thank you very much. As always, a pleasure to see you back on the board with me. And we'll come back and we'll do it all over again next Wednesday.
You got it.
Looking forward to it. So have a good week, my friend, and make it a safe one.
You
Once
too.
Again, everybody, I'm John Williams for Jeff Mannix. It is Bruins Diehards. Thanks an awful lot for joining us tonight. Either live stream, certainly pick us up on demand. We encourage you to do that. In the between, we'll be back again next Wednesday with another edition of the show. In between that time, have a good week, and please make it a safe one, and we'll see you then. Take care. Bye-bye.